Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Promised Land, a show about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by Rob Blanchett, as per usual. We're back ahead of Bournemouth away. Bournemouth absolutely stuffed Man United at Old Trafford earlier in the season.
I remember.
And, will the same thing happen this weekend? We're not going to talk too much about that match, though, today, because we feel like, from my perspective anyway, the football is kind of a... United are out of the top four, top five race. It's kind of a sideshow now to the long-term planning. So I think that's the way that we're going to maybe take today's show. How interesting is the Bournemouth game for you, Rob?
Not massively. I don't want to sound disrespectful there because I still think the football is the most important thing in what we do in our jobs and obviously in the game itself. But I agree with you. I think the kind of long game here is more what's interesting with Man United. You know, how do we end this season? What are we going to do? You know, does winning a few games now really help you? Well, that's still the idea, isn't it? So you still win football matches. You got the FA Cup coming up. That's obviously United's last chance, really, of any silverware. But I think more than that, Scott, it's just we're in limbo now. That's the word. You know, we're in kind of Ten Hag limbo. That's where we go now because we don't know this manager is going to be with us next season. There is kind of hints and digs that that's probably the case, is that Ineos might go looking elsewhere. That's something we'll talk about a lot in the next few weeks coming up. And Ten Hag's just got to do the best of what he's got, isn't he? You know, he's had injuries. He's still got injuries. There's still immense tactical problems on a football pitch for Manchester United. They can do some things well for 10 minutes and then look like they've never played together 10 minutes later. That's going to be a continuing thing. I don't think we're suddenly just going to get a change in form now in the next few games.
Yeah, Man United's run-in is Bournemouth away. FA Cup semi-final against Coventry City at Wembley next weekend. Then Sheffield United at home and Burnley at home. Two teams in the relegation zone who are bound for the championship, you would think. Palace away, Arsenal home, Newcastle home, Brighton away, and then potentially an FA Cup final if they are to win. So that is that's the run-in. Four games really in the next, five games in the next few weeks that you would expect Man United to win on any given day, but we all know it's not that simple. But as we've said from the top, really with top, United are 11 points away from top four and top five. And I think that's gone. I think everybody knows that's gone. How low will United finish? How high will United finish? Who knows? But like we say, the longer term strategy and the longer term planning is really what is going to underpin, or how good that is what's going to underpin United's success and the differential from where they are currently. There's new PSR rules coming in, which United might benefit from next season. I think it's not confirmed yet, but the Premier League voted on Thursday that teams will be able to spend up to 85% of their revenue. I think that's the way it's going to look on transfer fees, agent fees and wages. and that would give United a lot more room for maneuver.
Cha-ching for United, cha-ching. That is.
Cha-ching.
It's almost like they wrote that rule.
Yeah, it was unanimously voted for. I don't know the ins and outs of how that's going to look yet, but I think they vote on it in June to actually bring it into play, but I think it's a formality by this point. So that should mean that United and a few other select teams benefit from that, because United's revenue is, even in the face of their terrible on-pitch fortunes at the moment, the revenue is still pretty strong.
Yeah, and for 75% of the Premier League, revenues are really strong. So, like, I think this is why they voted for it unanimously, because it's only really the team squad that maybe come up that have a lower revenue base or a lower fan base that struggle with that rule. Whereas I think, I don't know, even if you go to a Bournemouth or a Brighton, you know, like teams that are traditionally from smaller territories, that the revenues are healthy. Do you know what I mean? So it means that they can also go and spend more, like an Aston Villa, you know, so that there's other teams that are kind of in that mid bracket where they're trying to get in the top four or in the top six. And it kind of benefits them all. But as you said, it benefits teams like Man United and now Man City, obviously incredibly strong revenues over the last 5 years. They'll be able to take advantage of this, and it will stop them from getting these points deductions, because this is why they're changing this rule, because they want to avoid these sporting sanctions. That's the truth.
And obviously United's wiggle room on that kind of thing moving forward will be better and stronger if they can clear their wage bill. And we'll talk about Rafa Varane a little bit on today's show. We'll talk about United need to clear out, don't they? Anthony Martial is going to leave, 250 grand a week off the wage bill. Rafa Varane likely to leave. We'll talk about that later in the show. Casemiro potentially leaving. Christian Eriksen potentially leaving. Lots of players wrong side of 30 or on around about 30 who are maybe not going to fetch loads of money in transfer fees. Maybe they leave on free transfers, but the wiggle room that would create for whatever United's new team off the pitch looks like, that will be beneficial and helpful. But before we get into the running order of today's show, subscribe to it. Our audio is on Apple and Spotify, and give us a 5-star review on there. Please find us, the Promised Land, a Manchester United podcast, if you have not subscribed already. 5-star reviews, etc., etc. Watch us on YouTube as well. You can like the stream, subscribe, leave a comment, and hit the notification bell so you never miss a show as well. And follow us on social media at @_ScottSaunders. On X, Instagram, and TikTok @_Rob_B on X, and YouTube at @TPLMUFC on X as well. Now, the running order today, what we're going to talk about, John Murta is leaving. Was that Tuesday or Wednesday? But John Murta is leaving.
Yes, the longer
this week-ish, I think. Mm. And his duties will be assumed by other people who are currently in the club. But off the back of that, so Jim Ratcliffe has held face-to-face talks with Amanda Staveley over Dan Ashworth. We'll talk about that. They want to get that one moving. There's still stalemate at the moment over the compensation package. We'll talk about, as I mentioned, Rafa Varane and Willy Kambwala, who could potentially get a run in the team with all of the defensive injuries and the players who are absent. Johnny Evans is absent. Rafa Varane is absent. Lisandro Martinez is absent, all for relatively long-term. Against how long's left of the season? There's like 6 weeks left, ish.
Yeah,
6 weeks left of the season.
God, I think Evans is closer. Evans is a lot closer than Varane.
But Johnny Evans playing? Do you really want to play a 36-year-old for the rest of the season?
No, not at all.
Johnny Evans getting a nice send off would be nice if he's going.
Ten Hag might want to do that, but I'm not sure I do.
But yes, Willy Kambwala, who played well against Liverpool, should get a run in the team. And then we'll talk about a player who's joined first team training this week. And some accounts on social media have been going crazy over this. Mm-hmm. He does not look his age. but Shay Lacey, we'll talk about him, because United's... if there's one thing United are doing well at the moment, it's their academy. And it's among the best in the country at the moment. Yes. They have already brought through, under Eric Ten Hag, brought through two players, maybe three now, if you can include Kambwala in this, three players into first team action. Two of them are regulars, start pretty much every match. Mm-hmm. Harry Amass has joined training over the last few weeks in the wake of problems at left back. Mm-hmm. Shay Lacey, could he be next? We've mentioned him a couple of times, but
we have. Yeah.
If you watch his highlights, he reminds you, this is a big comparison to make, and it's not me saying or Rob saying that he's going to be as good as this player.
Lionel Messi.
He just looks he looks like Phil Foden when he has the ball. He does a bit.
Foden-esque.
Right winger. Could be getting, maybe you'll see, maybe see him get a sniff of first team football at the end of the season.
I hope so. Yeah, I really do.
So, we'll come to that later. John Murta, to start with, officially announced as departing Man United. There was some talk over whether a new role would be found for him. He was, what was his title? It was along the lines of director of football or football director, I think it was, wasn't it?
I think Darren Fletcher is the football director. That's, I think, Darren Fletcher's role, which he will not be much longer. But it was more a kind of overseeing. It was a directorship, but it wasn't football director.
Darren Fletcher was technical director.
I think the thing is that they gave Darren Fletcher just some rogue title, and it was a bit like, well, I know they're just trying to give him a job here, but
John Murta, football director,
right? So I think Fletcher, they're talking about retaining him as well potentially, but I don't think there was ever a chance here of John Murta staying. Like we've said, when he's been in the stands, it's been quite obvious, isn't it? Ineos all sat in a row together and John Murta sat one or two rows behind. He wasn't exactly in the conversation during games or while they're chatting away about what they're watching. But inevitable, Scott, I think this is, again, when you look at the restructuring at Manchester United, Richard Arnold was the first full guy and the correct one to go. I think John Murta is the right one here to exit as well. He hasn't been a complete bust in terms of maybe the organisation behind Manchester United with the youth team, as you said there, and don't really think he has overly too much input into that. But he was the guy that United sent out to go and do some negotiations and stuff. And so that's a change, because he was the guy that would get shipped off to Barcelona or somewhere to go and have a chat with someone and get photographed and waved to the cameras and then disappear from view. So
the lasting image, though, of him and Richard Arnold. There's the one of Richard Arnold where he goes to a pub and speaks to fans, which at the time was an interesting move,
wasn't it?
Then there's those images from two summers ago of John Murta and Richard Arnold standing on the streets in Barcelona trying to get a deal for Frenkie de Jong over the line. It took them 7 weeks.
Yeah.
12 weeks even. It was about 12 weeks, wasn't it? It took them about 12 weeks and then they failed.
Well, it's 2 years still now. Yeah. They still didn't get there.
Yeah. And Murta madness is ending. That was a Twitter favorite term.
Yeah.
Murta madness.
Mundane Murta in my head, because, again, he had an opportunity to do something in Scotland Football Club. You know, I think actually those at the top of the tree in the executive with Manchester United, I'm talking about Richard Arnold and Murta, kind of ran the ship for a long time. The Glazers are not really interested in any of that stuff and kind of let them get on with it because they were their guys. So I think this is, again, this is a natural progression here towards the new structure, which we know all about. It's like it's quite funny, Scott, the reports about Dan Ashworth, and it seems to get reported every day like, oh, it's new. Something new's happened. And it's like it's been the ongoing process for weeks and weeks and weeks. Of course, we have got something extra to talk about today because of United's talks with Newcastle. But I think with John Murta, you know, good luck to him. I don't think he ever really did the job to the standard that we needed. But then again, there's a lot of people at Manchester United in the last 10 years who have fallen foul of that. And, you know, Murta came from Everton and came actually with David Moyes. So he's been at a club a long time. And it's time to kind of out with the old and in with the new.
Yeah, he's... it's been a long time coming, to be fair. Like we talked about with Darren Fletcher, he will get some kind of new role, which may link the academy to the first team. And I think the fact that he has been in that role, there's very few things that have worked at United over the last few years, but when you look at the way that they've mapped players' paths to the first team, I think that's gone quite well, and I think Darren Fletcher plays an important part in that, especially when he's spoken out. I think he did a bit with Rio Ferdinand and Johnny Evans a few weeks ago when Rio asked him, what's your job? And I think he talked about that. But obviously with the theme of today's show is being, especially around like Shay Lacy, this kind of thing, is being who's next to break in. Obviously, we talked about Kobbie Mainoo enough. We talked about Kobbie Mainoo before he was even in the first team as well. We did the same thing with Garnacho. Harry Amass, we haven't gone into too much detail on, really, I don't think, but he's on the fringes and he's a similar age to Shay Lacy as well. And if they can continue that path of progression through Darren Fletcher and whoever else is coming in, then you might find again that United at some point in the near future have half of their first team, you know, with academy prospects in it.
Yeah, and I think with Fletch, the whole thing is that, you know, he's kind of come in this role to be part of the development and to help around. What I don't want to see, Scott, is Darren Fletcher warming up the team before games, because that's what I see. I'm there at games, I see it. I don't want Darren Fletcher doing that. It's not his job. He's not a coach. So if he's going to be a coach and that's what his job is, fine, do it. But I don't want anyone in the kind of technical aspects of the planning side of it to be doing that. I want them to be more savvy. I want them to be the more desk-based people to be able to talk about things and to put a kind of a project together. I think the thing with Darren Fletcher, Scott, is that he's an intelligent guy, right? He's a clever guy. He isn't your normal average footballer. He's got something up here. Fergie's always talked about that as well, about how intelligent he is and how he's a thinker and is expansive. So if he's part of that, Scott, and part of a new generation at Man United, that's great. But at the same time, I'm not that worried about it. If he stays, great. If he goes, fine. I just think you have to now get all the pieces in the right place so you can make a run now in the next 2 or 3 years.
So, big thanks to John Murta, who came in, as Rob mentions, with David Moyes in a variety of different jobs. And Brian Robson this week said something along the lines of, I essentially screwed up on the signing of Jude Bellingham. I didn't do my job properly. Also, I'm paraphrasing him there, but that's essentially what he said. And if you look into like detailed reports of how that day went, the fingers essentially pointed at John Murta a little bit for taking it in a direction maybe that he shouldn't have.
Yes. We heard at the time that, you know, you hear this in football all the time, done deal. Bellingham's done. No doubt about it. Come to United. United have absolutely put the red carpet out for him. Was it like Fergie's there? Eric Cantona's there? Brian Robson's there? It's like this kid, we've got him. You know, we're going to get him. And he went, blah, 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 blah. First team football. That conversation got bypassed and he went to Dortmund because Dortmund went, we'll play you. It's kind of as simple as that. Whereas I think when I did a show on it at the time, I was like, even if we sign Bellingham tomorrow, I wouldn't be surprised at 17 if he just sits on our bench for 2 years, because that's how it felt at that time. Do you know what I mean? Like, didn't feel United were ready for a talent like Bellingham at that point. Just looked like he'd be a development project. And of course, Jude Bellingham doesn't want that. Not interested. So yeah, Robbo did say that and kind of mentioned Murta as well, that they failed because they honestly thought they'd done their jobs. And maybe it shows in the modern game, Scott, that you have to talk to young footballers a little bit differently about what you give them and how you motivate them, because it's not all old school anymore, is it? This is new school, and you've got to be able to offer them something tangible. Quite often that is getting playing minutes, and that's something that Man United have to look at.
Yes. We'll move on, though, because the Times report that has come out on, I think it was Thursday night, intimates that sources believe the announcement this week by United over Murta's stepping down is an indication that progress is being made via Jim Ratcliffe.
Yes.
On Dan Ashworth, who has been, as we even said from, I think it was back in December, we did this, that Dan Ashworth was wanted as the new sporting director or equivalent, whatever job title he's going to get at United. Jim Ratcliffe has said he is clearly one of the top sporting directors in the world. And this is, it's going to happen at some point. It's just a case of when, isn't it? But I think when Murta leaves and when Richard Arnold leaves, and now you've got Berarda in, Jason Wilcox is waiting. I've seen Julian Ward being linked this week as well with the head of recruitment role.
Yep.
And we talked about him before.
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks to me that United want to get this structure in place for the summer.
Of course. Like, if you're going to go into the transfer market, the savvy thing to do is that, this is why we said as well, the manager's position isn't actually the most important thing here. It's not like it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. The most important thing here, Scott, is getting structure so you know where your pounds and penny are being spent and what your idea is. Because there's no doubt, I think this administration is going to go out with an idea of what it wants to do. It's going to build a squad in the next year or two, as you just said there, with the kind of change in FFP and all of this, that they're going to try and squeeze that for every penny to get what they want out of this. And I think the thing is with Dan Ashworth, we said this, I think, on the very first show we ever did about Dan Ashworth, and there was all this, oh, United are going to have to pay 20 million, 30 million, here we go, mad money. I was just like, it doesn't work like that. United will sit and wait till Newcastle go, and we have to hire someone else now. So there you go. And this is where we are now. And I think the funny thing is that Newcastle and the Saudis have dug their heels in, because it is a kind of little bit of a political game there. You know, they don't want to be seen to be weak. There's no need for them to be weak. And of course, Dan Ashworth is sat at home gardening. The weather's getting better now, Scott. I've been doing a bit of gardening, been out there, because now it's a bit more sunny. Dan Ashworth's thinking, well, I'll just turn up at Old Trafford when they sort it all out. I've got nothing else to do now. So Dan Ashworth's obviously already having a big say at Man United. This is how I look at it. Even Omar Berada's not officially in the job, but they're all working towards the same goal. So there'll be plenty of discussions behind the scenes. So, yeah, so Jim, now his idea is to get to Newcastle, as he did this week, and to argue the toss and to get his guy out of the football club so he can then hire him. And it is as done deal as you could possibly get, I think, in terms of the sporting directorship.
Like you say, Newcastle need to move on themselves. What are they going to do? Just happily just sit there paying him while they wait?
Yeah,
for United to not pay the full compensation that they want, you know, yeah. And it's just not going to happen, is it?
Get a grip. Like, I think the thing is like, had United gone for Dougie Freedman at Crystal Palace, you might have been able to go to Steve Parrish's office and negotiate something quite quickly because it's Crystal Palace. But Newcastle want to be bigger players, and they are, in terms of money, richest club in the world. So they don't have to do things exactly how other teams might. But I also think, Scott, Man United are not trying to strong-arm this. They're just being quite calm about it. And I like that. You know, they're being professional. They're like, okay, he's on gardening leave. He is going to leave that football club quite quickly because you also need a director of football. So you can't continue in that vein. We've seen in Newcastle this year, Scott, with injuries and whatever, that manager now is at risk because obviously their league position. So they might be pressing a reset button in a few weeks' time. Do you know what I mean? So let's see where that goes. But it is a done deal. Everyone behind the scenes is very, very calm, and Ineos feel like they've got their guy.
You say done deal. It's not, conversation's not done, but you
know, I don't think there's no chance that the conversation's going to go, oh, do you know what? Dan's decided to stay at Newcastle. It's not happening. It's done. He's not going back to Newcastle. He might have to sit on his hands for a while, like if they can't agree a deal. But again, this is what I said before. These people still carry on doing their jobs. They have the conversations and their conference calls and whatever, and the little whispers, and run their football clubs. That's how they do it. So I think the thing is, United, as you said, John Murto being not shown the door, but maybe the timing of it, because they could have waited till the summer, couldn't they, with Murto? Could have just said to Murto, wait till the summer. You know, we'd have to talk about it. He's gone out the door now. I do think there's some kind of correlation there in terms of the hires. That maybe John Murta's time is done and someone else is coming in to do the job.
If you're not, I can get them all in. When was Berada starting? Was it June 1st or July 1st? I can't remember.
Yeah, some normally contracts start on June 1st, don't they? Football contracts.
July 1st is when
July 1st, sorry, yes.
I think
yes.
Berada was June 1st, I think it was. Yeah. Anyway, I'll look at that as we continue to discuss. But whatever the makeup of this, whenever it's in, whenever this structure is in, Ashworth, Berada, Jason Wilcox, recruitment or head of recruitment, whoever that is, because I think United want that as well. And there'll probably be some other switch ups as well. Manager, whoever that is, although the manager won't. I know Ten Hag is in talks at the moment about like next season, et cetera, and you should really include the manager in that, but the manager's not going to be the guy who is making all the decisions. And I think the decision on who the manager is will come down to that team. Dan Ashworth, probably Berada will have a say, but the word is that they want to pass all of that control over who the manager is to Dan Ashworth. And that's why the Graham Potter links are coming up. Obviously, they just won't go away. But they will also have to preside over correcting the wage bill and ensuring that there is a path to the first team, like we've talked about with Darren Fletcher, a path to the first team for academy players, and making sure that United spend their money more responsibly than they have for the last decade plus.
Yes.
And as much as Raphael Varane, you could argue that he's had a good enough spell at United, but I tweeted yesterday, Real Madrid know when to sell players, and Real Madrid absolutely mugged off United for about 100 million quid. 100 million quid. And I think everybody knew it at the time as well. For Rafa Varane, maybe it was short of 100 million. It was like 35, 40-ish, wasn't it? And then Casemiro was 60 million. But that's two players who they got multiple Champions Leagues out of that they... Obviously, it was a little bit of a surprise that they sold them both at the same time. But you, when you're a big club and you want to sell a player, you want to do it at that point where the football world in general still considers them at their peak. But you know, who see them every day in training, who see their maybe drop off in some of their levels, like, maybe it might be the right time to cash in and just go and sign some younger players. And yeah, obviously, Real Madrid didn't plunge all the money in that they... the money they received from United isn't directly responsible for their new look midfield of Jude Bellingham, Tchouaméni, Camavinga, who we talked about on the show, Camavinga as well, didn't we? Yeah. I think he picked them up for 25 mil. But that definitely helps their bank balance. And that is the difference. Real Madrid are currently top of La Liga. I know that Man City may knock them out of the Champions League next week, but Real Madrid are one of the most famous clubs in the world, as Man United are. And those two deals, Casemiro and Varane, reflects the difference between how well Real Madrid have been managed over the last few years without Premier League money versus Man United, who have willingly given them 100 million quid just because they were big names who've won a few Champions Leagues. Real Madrid have now moved on to a new era. They will sign Kylian Mbappe, they'll get Endrick, and they will be fine for a number of years. United have to play catch up in the meanwhile, and they've given Madrid 100 million quid in the process. So,
and yeah, and that's from the guy that invented the Galactico model, you know, with Florentino Perez. Is that, you know, he spent years going around buying the David Beckhams of the world and the Zidanes and everyone he could get his hands on and building this Galactico model, and then has realized through his advice that's been given to him at his football club over the last few years, is that at some point you have to move away from it. You have to build intelligently and organically. And that still means spending money, Scott, but it means, as you said, like I said, about being a bit more frugal and about spending it in the right places. Getting Casemiro and Varane out of Real Madrid seemed like a huge victory for Manchester United, didn't it? It's like, oh, here we are. We've tempted these players. I think the big thing was when Varane arrived, because Varane arrived the year before, didn't he? Did Varane arrive under Ole? Yeah, he did, didn't he? So Varane arrived and you needed a centre-back. So you're looking at it, you're going, oh, well, we need a Varane-type player. So that's good. We've actually got the model there in Varane. And when you looked at Casemiro, it was a similar, wasn't it? It's kind of like knee-jerk reaction. You need a number six. Oh, look, Casemiro is the, inverted commas, best number six in the world. That was kind of things thrown around all the time. Problem is, Scott, they're both getting on. They're both aging. And now you're at this point where at the back end of their deals, you kind of know they're not going to be as good as maybe the players you signed, because they get injuries, you get knocks, and the Premier League is totally unforgiving on old bodies. It really is, in a way that maybe La Liga and Serie A are not. You know, all the players can play on there and carry on. I saw Modric the other day come on a football pitch, you know, jogging around. He can still do it off the bench. So I think you look at Real Madrid, Scott, that's actually the model to copy now. You need to go and find your Camavingas, your Tchouaménis. You've got to go and find your Bellingham somewhere, which is a lot harder. But you've got to build it organically from the bottom up. And that means getting those wages off, because the players that you mentioned at the top of the show, Casemiro, Varane, who else did you mention? Eriksen. There was one Martial. Other. Who was it?
We all forget about Martial, but he is still there.
Martial, yeah. That's overall, that's £50 million of wages a year for those four players. £50 million. that is a huge chunk of your wage bill. Now, if you took that 50 million off, you can divide that into multiple players. You can do, especially young players, really, really quickly. You can go find your Garnachos. You can go hunting. You can actually go get these kind of that bracket of 18 to 21-year-old. That's what United have got to do, Scott. This is the way you got to do it now. You got to do it. You got to go with youth. Youth is the way forward. And just supplement it with experienced players. But we've seen it this year. Like, the Amrabat experiment hasn't worked, has it? You know, you've gone that route. You tried it. It doesn't work. The manager doesn't like it. And Man United have lost lots of games. So you've had the opportunity to try things this year. I don't think any of those things have worked, except Manu and Garnacho. I think they're the only two that you can look at the end of the season. If the season finished tomorrow, I think we'd all go, those two guys probably are players of the year and they're kids. So maybe the pathway is already built there for Man United, Scott. I think Ineos might look at this and go, okay, that's the bit that works at our football club. Let's push that forward.
Let's talk about Rafa Varane just more in depth, bit briefly, yeah. Because he, as you say, I think he arrived in 2021. Lots of fanfare. It was a nice moment. It really was. Like, for they presented both of the players on the pitch, didn't they?
Yeah.
And Casemiro was just before the Liverpool win.
Like that, I think. Of the Stretford end.
Yeah. Obviously, big stars. They've won a lot of Champions Leagues. They've won a lot of trophies. And classic to the United way over the last 12 years. Here's a big star.
Azang.
Look, let's enjoy this person for a year or two. And I know there's a conversation going on about Varane and saying, you know, Varane's actually been present for a lot of minutes. And, you know, there's a lot of defenders who are actually less available than Rafa Varane is.
Mm.
That's actually a thing that I've seen. But when you are on as much money as he is, it'd be different if he was like Johnny Evans levels, right? If he was like on a wage like Johnny Evans was, and you could bring him in for experience. And that's the, like, I've said this recently, Kevin De Bruyne at Man City is now reaching that age where you have to manage his minutes.
Yeah.
And he can't play 65 games a season because he physically can't do it. He's suffering a lot of injuries. He missed a lot of time this season. And when you get to, he's 30-ish. Is he?
De Bruyne's older than that, isn't he?
He might be older than that now.
32?
32?
I think so. He's getting on. He looks younger than me.
He's actually 33 going into next
33.
Season.
Yeah, I thought so.
I'm really underestimating how...
He's finished. Hey, do you know what? He's finished. I think I said it on our show 6 months ago. I went, Man City will move De Bruyne on because they're ruthless. Not because they don't like De Bruyne. They'll look at De Bruyne and go, you're a high wage earner. You know, you're now in and out the team and Phil Foden's God. So we don't need you anymore. Thanks a lot, mate. Off you go. That's how it will be. Because that's how you have to be, isn't it? I think with high wage earners is that they've got to give you... They've got to give you value for money if you're going to pay those big dollars. But yeah, you're right about Varane, totally.
So obviously, Varane, there's been chat about trying to justify whether to extend his contract. His contract's up at the end of this season. There is a year's worth of extension option in it on the same wages as currently. United are not taking up that option. If they are to extend... There's been talk about a pay-to-play deal or reduced wages.
He's not going to do that, is he?
But is he going to do that? No. I think by this point, I think there's options in Saudi Arabia for him to go and earn an absolute wedge of money in the final years of his career. I think that's probably the most likely way it's going to go, unless he decides to go back to somewhere like Lens or something. I think that's where he broke through.
He's been out of the homeland for a very, very long time. He's played, isn't he, outside of France. And I think the thing is, Scott, is that he talked recently, and Casemiro's talked about this as well, just off the cuff about Saudi Arabia and all this. And I actually think that where we were at the peak of Saudi maybe a year ago, it's not as kind of players are looking at it, and there's lots of stories going around and coming back out with agents, and agents are a little bit more hesitant. They're going, don't like the setup there. It's not quite working for our players. Our players are not happy. Our players want to come out. So I think there's actually, maybe 12 months ago, you could have moved those players on quite easily to Saudi just simply because of the money. I think the thing is with Varane, Scott, and you just got to be absolutely ruthless about this, yeah? Rafa Varane, when he is fit, is still a very good footballer. When he is fit, again, inverted commas. And he's been more fit this year than not. So we can't really moan too much about that. But you know that he can break down at any moment. And because of that, you got to get that player at your football club. That's how it is. or someone who's a bit younger, say Luke Shaw, similar situation, but Luke Shaw's got some more years in front of him. So you might go, well, we'll persist with that, try and work with the player. But what are you doing with Rafa Varane? You know, what are you doing with Casemiro? You know these players are not the future. You know this, so do it now. Get them out of the football club, pay them up, get them out, sell them, and then bring in kids and bring in other players that you can rotate in and out of those positions. I don't think Varane's been bad at all this year, Scott, but I think he is part of the wider dysfunction at Man United, is that these players are on inflated wages and they don't give you enough wins in a season. And it's just as simple as that. Nothing personal to Rafa. Nice to see him at Man United in this little spell that he's been at the football club. But I think someone tweeted you, Scott, to that tweet and said, oh, you know, we got value out of Varane, you know, because he's played 100 games. If you work that out, he's probably got paid about £1 million a game. It's not value. It's rubbish. Yeah, it's not value at all. That's crass. You know, you're supposed to play players £200,000 a week and they play one game a week. That's how it works. But if you pay £1 million for each game, then that's stupid. So you've got to send these players out. So, yeah, I think that's where I stand with it with Varane. I think some people were like, keep Varane, let Maguire go. I think this season, to me, he's told me the other way around. I'm like, I'd rather extend Maguire. And because of the leadership he's given, actually, his form has been better than Varane at times. So I know Varane's played well recently, but no. Sit Varane now, play Camboala. You've got the opportunity to maybe, you know, spin the dial a little bit now, spin the bottle and find a better way. And I think that's it for Varane. I don't think we'll see him. We might never see him play for United again, Scott, because they're saying that he might not be back for the end of the season, but we'll see how that goes.
I don't know. I think we will before the end, but the point remains, you've got to move on. And when...
Yeah.
If United were competing for top four, I would look at this differently and I would say, okay, get him back and then let's get him in as soon as possible. But they're so far off. They're going to finish at maximum sixth, potentially lower. But then if they perform as... Or if they get the results over the next four games that you would A, expect, and B, hope with the run of games that they've got, you know, maybe they will end up finishing sixth and playing Europa League football next season. I've seen suggestions this week from different media that if there's a way that Man United can finish sixth and then still end up in the Champions League. Not, honestly.
Sell those newspapers.
It's ridiculous. Anyway. So United are sixth at the moment. They have an FA Cup semi-final and a potentially FA Cup final, and then seven games left in the Premier League, I think it is.
Yeah.
Against teams that you would expect them to beat, what's the harm giving Willy Camboala an extended run? You know, it'd be different if Martinez is there, but obviously he could be out for another month or however long it is. I'm not sure the exact... time frame on his return, but when you think of Johnny Evans, yeah, he's been good, like way better than anybody would have ever expected, played way more minutes than anybody would have ever expected. You want him, if he's going to leave, you want him to get a nice send off at some point. You want him to play again and he can say goodbye to the Old Trafford crowd properly, whenever that is. But is he going to be a long-term option? No. Like, now is your testing ground for players like Willy Camboala, maybe even Harry Amass, and maybe even Shay Lacey before the end of the season. You can have a look at them. Remember when it was Josh Harrop, wasn't it? Remember Josh Harrop came in and scored on the final day of the season against Crystal Palace?
Oh, was it as well? And was it Wilson as well came in?
James Wilson.
James Wilson, next big thing. He was going to be huge, wasn't he? James Wilson scored on his debut at the end. That was under Ryan Giggs, wasn't it?
Yeah. Turns out they weren't the next big thing, right? But I think there's more hope in the players that were not Shay Lacey, Harry Amass. There's a lot more hope, I think, that they will be longer term stays.
Yeah.
But with the likes of Camboala, you know, played really well against Liverpool. You've got to use this extended period of time, like next 6 weeks or so, really. I'm not saying play him in every game, but give him a chance. Mm. Give him a shot to see if he can hack it. And that is a better option, really. Because your aspirations of finishing in the top four are gone. Maybe they're not saying that internally, but realistically, look at it.
It's a better option if you take the line of what we said at the top of the show, which is that you have to think just long-term now. You can't, like, short-termisms don't really matter. But we're still in this vortex of Ten Hag. So Ten Hag is going to stay long-term, and he's been given guarantees by his boss then you can maybe spin the wheel a little bit and play the kids. I don't think he's going to do that, Scott. Like, we know what Ten Hag does. As I said, I describe him as a conservative because I think he has a very set methodology. I don't think he's going to be thinking, oh, yeah, let's just play the kids and see how the season pans out. I think he's going to be like, I need to win as many games as possible. And guess what? I'm going to play counter-press and it's going to be chaotic and we're going to do what we've been doing for the last 6 months. So I would like to see something that's building towards next season already. I'm not quite sure we're at that point. You might get there, Scott. If the manager lost his job and you had an interim, then you might be able to go, right, let's just throw away the playbook and do something completely different. I think we'll see more of the same. But yeah, I think Kambwala, I think he's kind of earned his minutes. Like, you just talked about Johnny Evans there, Scott. I think Johnny Evans, like, thank God we have had him this year. Like, that's what I will say. You imagine if we didn't give Evans that year contract, you know, United would have been in real trouble at centre-back. But you don't want Johnny Evans to be playing 20-odd games in a season, 25 games. He's there to play six. So I think, again, with Kambwala, is that you now got to get on that horse. It's time now. Like, you've got to give him minutes and find a way because Varane is going to be the next one out the door, I think. And even if you triggered Varane, Scott, and Varane did stay, say, for next year, I still wouldn't have Varane as first choice. I'd still be playing Kambwala. I'd be saying, sorry, Rafa, you're going to have to sit the stands this week. So there's all of that. There's the balance with the money and all of those things. But I think Kambwala, I think you saw it at Liverpool. It's just a short cameo. But give him the rest of the games. No, just play him and Maguire. I think they're your two best centre-backs when fit at the moment. And you work with that till the end of the season.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is it about him you like?
I like it. Right. All right, let's do it. Let's go thing. He's 6'4", just under 6'4", a smidgen. Yeah. He's athletic. He's quick. He's technical. He's progressive. He really likes to play with the space in front of him, yet he can still play coverage. And that's a unique thing with defenders now. You look at players like Saliba, that this is the kind of the genetic pool you're kind of going for about how you want your centre-backs to be, is that you want them to kind of be able to do stuff on the ball, but you also still want the defensive qualities there, don't you? And I think with Kambwala, that's what you're developing now at his age group, is that he needs to play games to get looks at good strikers. What do good strikers do at this level so I can learn? What have Everton done this year with Branthwaite, Scott? Yeah, they've stuck with it because they've had to, but he's had a whole season under his belt of playing against the best in the Premier League. Mixed results. Some games he's been outstanding. Other games he's got wrecked in some of those, but most of the kind of opinion is that this boy's got something because we've seen it, we've watched it. And that's the thing with Kambwala now, Scott, is that he's got the technical and the physical aspects, but he needs some experience in it now. So play him. Because if you don't play him, then the option has to be that you loan him. You go out somewhere next year on loan and that you get him 40, 50, 60 games under his belt. Or you keep him at United, Scott, and he's part of your rotation. And I'm kind of happy with either, really. But I think we're at that point now with the injuries, one thing or another, at the end of the season. There's a little window that's opened here for him, is that you can play him and you can do it. A lot of people were worried before the Liverpool game and saying to me, oh, this kid, you know, it's Liverpool. This is going to be horrible. And I was like, no, he's known for having a good attitude. He's a leader. He's got leadership qualities. You know, he knows what he can do in himself. I think we saw that against Liverpool. So he just went out there and tried to do his job. And that's all I ask, Scott, is to go out there and try and do the best.
We'll see. I think he will play, surely, unless... but they released updates on the fitness of Varane and Evans yesterday. I think they're both missing some time, at least. I think they're definitely missing the Bournemouth game.
Evans is a week, I think, only. But they said potentially 3 to 4 weeks for Varane because he's got a thigh a recurring thigh injury.
Well, that's not good, is it?
No, that's one point. Like, no, why flog him into the ground? Like, what? Drag him back. He can't run. Like you saw in the game where he pulled up Scott in that game and obviously had to go off. It's that you're kind of flogging him. He's trying his best, but his body's failing. So no point. Play a kid, sit him on the bench. Rafa, you still earn your money. Pout on the back. Thanks a lot. And then move on. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I think Evans will come back. And I wouldn't be surprised if Evans does end up starting the final games because I think that's more likely what Ten Hag will do, Evans and Maguire.
I think you've got to start taking some decisions that may not necessarily be completely popular with everybody. Because I know Rafa Varane's a fan favourite, but, you know, it's not all about pleasing the fans. It's about running a successful business as well. As grim as it sounds, you've got to run your football club properly. And I'm sure when Man City sell Bernardo Silva this summer at some point, that won't be the most popular decision.
And he's a fan favourite because of what he's won at another club. Like, come on. It's not that he's got the acumen from being at Man United and winning stuff. So I think you can move on like comfortably. Do you know what I mean? Without it being a big deal. But as you said, there's a lot of fans that don't like that stuff. And, you know, they like their favourites on one thing or another.
Remember, please subscribe to The Promised Land on audio on Apple and Spotify and give us a 5-star review. Subscribe on YouTube as well. Like the stream, subscribe and leave a comment. And we'll get in now to the newest potential prospect to break into Manchester United first team action because he's joined first team training this week. There's been pictures and there's a picture on the thumbnail of him. He looks about 10 years old, but he is in fact 16, 17. How old is he? 17?
He's only 6 years older than 10.
Shea Lacey has joined first team training. If you're not sure or you don't really follow youth team football all that much, you know, Rob and I talked about Garnacho and Cobby Mainoo and feel like there was a lot of excitement about both of them. How would you compare the excitement levels on Shea Lacey to those guys?
Comparable, very much so. And again, I think back to Cobby when he was 15, 16. I think back to Garnacho when we saw him, especially in that run where he kind of got his first minutes and when United won the Youth Cup. I think when you look at these young talents and you see the ceiling is high, you've got to kind of manage it properly. But I think you can also get excited about it, Scott, because they're not that far away. We only got to look at Jude Bellingham, like when he was 17 to where he is now. It's not actually that long ago. And they can make these strides season to season. So, yeah, Shea Lacey now training with the first team, had a bit of a bad injury, was out for 6 months, but is now back in the frame, now fit again. Is he ready to start? No. But I think when you look at, you know, prospects say like Ahmad and you look at Shea Lacey, I think Lacey is actually the one who's got the more rounded gifts and attributes, doing incredibly well with England youth, you know, made that step up. And it's just, do you know what he's got? He's the modern footballer. He's the modern forward. Yeah, I can play attacking midfield, can play all of the positions left and right, can play winger, can come inside, play central midfield, can get the ball deep, can travel with the ball, can pass the ball. And all of it is about technical ability. And that is exactly what United have missed for 10 years, Scott, in their squad, is that not enough players with technical ability. Like, it'd be Paul Pogba and everyone else who can't pass a football. So that would be a problem for many, many years, you're relying on one player. I think with Shea Lacey, he is close. Will we see him this year? I'm not sure. But I'm enthused that he's now with the first team. Like, as you said, he does look like he's 10. And, you know, he might even be as small as a 10-year-old in some aspects. But I think the whole thing is that he's gifted. He's gifted. And I remember seeing Foden at that age, at 15, 16. I remember seeing him and people talking about Foden at that time. And the comparisons in those days was Messi. You know, people were like, oh, he's got Messi-like qualities. Well, he's not Messi, is he? But he became a very good footballer, Phil Foden, might now be top 5, top 10 player in the world at the moment. Can you develop Shea Lacey to be similar? Fingers crossed. There's a big maybe there. He's a good player.
But if you watch him, and like obviously if you spend any time watching United's youth team fixtures, or if you spend any time watching, because I know the thing that kids do nowadays is compilations
I said the other day that obviously Ronaldinho was a kid that like was a player who caught everyone's imagination. He's one of the most favored players of the current generation because of the skills and that kind of thing. But the way players are judged nowadays, if Ronaldinho was playing nowadays, he'd have all the skills and stuff, but people will be asking questions about his statistics and that amount of goals and assists and all this kind of stuff.
Pass completion rate.
I don't know why I moved down that path. But if you look at Shay Lacy and just look at the way he carries the ball and the way he drops a shoulder, the way he faints, the way he dribbles, the way he switches the ball between both feet, the way he occupies space and the way he picks the ball up when he starts dribbling, does kind of look like a Phil Foden regen. In terms of style, anyway. I'm not saying he's going to emulate Phil Foden.
AI
or Ronaldinho, for that matter. I don't know why I just brought him up, but
Ronaldinho's been in the press because he's Barcelona PSG, so I think you've seen him, and it's just he was at the game the other day and was on the pitch and waving to people, so I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I don't know what point I was trying to make there. I think
he's a baller, isn't he? I know what you mean. He's like he's a bit like young Ronaldo, isn't it? It's like step overs and flicks and tricks, and it's more probably akin to TikTok than actually winning football matches in the modern day.
Yeah. So Shay Lacy on the verge. Well, he's in training. And if you just, I would encourage you, if you haven't already done it, just to go and like, look at his compilations. That's what I was talking about. I was talking about compilations, wasn't I? And how you can make any player look amazing through compilations. Like you can probably make Nicholas Bentner look amazing, or Bebe look amazing through a compilation video nowadays, just 3 minutes. Cause that's the way it's judged. But you know, and that was the point I was trying to make, right? Yeah. Some players can look amazing through compilations, even though they actually weren't that effective and all that good. But what you will see in any compilation of Shay Lacy is you'll see what looks like a natural, really. He looks like a natural footballer. Kobbie Mainoo looks like a natural footballer, the way he carries himself, the way he gets his head up and, you know, and all of this. And you could kind of tell just through the eye test. Is something that people say. The eye test tells you that this player is actually quite good. And obviously, Shay Lacy, the challenges he will have, and maybe, Rob, we talked about this, I think, before we started recording, how, like, being big and imposing doesn't really matter. Maybe Foden is, he's not a big guy. And obviously, that Barcelona team that ripped the world to shreds in 2009 through that era, they beat United twice in Champions League finals in 3 years. You know, they weren't necessarily the biggest team, but technical ability and technical quality was the most important thing. I think the game has reverted to Arsenal, a team of giants nowadays, but they do have players who are nimble and small. Man City are largely a team of giants, but you can carry players who are maybe not necessarily that height and have that technical ability. That's the one concern I have. Hopefully he goes through a growth spurt. maybe fills out a bit, but obviously when you're 16, 17, you hope that comes. But one of the criticisms of Ahmad has been, obviously, is he physically capable to kind of deal with it? So that's the one thing I would look at, and maybe that will hold him back until that does happen. But in terms of talent, you know, he's right there.
Yeah, I'm personally not as worried about those things. Like, again, I think Garnacho and Manu's a really good example. Like, Manu, I think, looks very natural in that midfield now, isn't it? Where it was only 5 minutes ago, the same things were being said about him. Is like, you know, physically, is he big enough? And I think the same with Garnacho being a forward. People were like, well, he's going to get bodied. And he has this year. Like, he's had times where fullbacks have tried to bully him, but that's all part of the learning process for me. And I think the thing is with Shay Lacy, just making the comparisons over Manu, obviously very, very different player stylistically and with the position, but what they both do and what modern players do and youngsters and what they're trained to do is to create all of this space. When they get the ball, where do I get the ball? So it's about off-ball work, and he is really good at it. And that's more important, because if people can't get near you, Scott, it doesn't matter how big the opponent is. They can't get anywhere near you and you're 10 yards off them. They're going to just be chasing the shadows, aren't they? And I think the thing is, you still need some like physicality in your team, especially maybe in the defensive end there. But when you're looking at the attackers now, I think, you know, even the day of the big attacker is kind of gone. Like Haaland's there, Huijlen's fairly big, but you start going down.
Big.
Huh?
He's big.
Who's that? Haaland?
Højlund.
And Højlund's big. Yeah, Højlund, well, he's 6 foot, isn't he? So he's not like a giant. 6 foot's a normal height, I think, in modern society. But the whole thing is that the days of Peter Crouch heights are not a thing as much anymore. It's more about, I think, speed, talent, and technicality in the forward positions. So I look at Shay Lason, I'm just like, yeah, he's a right winger that inverts on his left foot, that can play through midfield in all the positions. And you're kind of like, that's what you need in the modern game. Do you know what? That's what you wanted Sancho to be, really. You're buying Sancho to be your baller, to be able to
ball out. Didn't even mention Sancho wages at the top of the show.
Well, there you go. Another wage that you very easily get off your wage bill. So, you know, and I would just rather that these young lads get the contracts and the minutes and that you give them that incentive to build their careers. I just think with Shay Lacy, there is something about him. There's no doubt about it. And I felt the same when I saw Phil Foden in the early years at City, looking at youth football. You knew really early on there was something about him. You just saw like the technicality and the way that the low centre of gravity, I always think of that with small players, like how do you utilise that? Because that low centre of gravity gets you away from the challenge quickly. Shay Lacy does that already for me. I watch him and he can ghost into the channel without anyone seeing him. It's just like being invisible. It's like a special power. And when you can do that as a young player, that's something I think Ahmed needs to learn. Like, I think if Ahmed could be a more ghostly player, pick the ball up in other players, in other areas of the pitch, be able to run at teams, I think he'd get more minutes. You can see that Ten Hag's not as keen with Ahmed. But Shay Lacy is actually a kind of Ten Hag-like player. So next year, if the manager is still with us, Shay Lacy might fit what he's trying to do on that right-hand side.
I think the point is, whoever the manager is, the structure above him,
yeah,
should be promoting that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an important thing. It's part of United's tradition and history that they have successful youth players who bridge the gap and come into the first team and make themselves mainstays. That's something that United do better than most clubs in the world. And Shay Lacy, Harry Amass, potentially, who's been maybe around the first team a little bit longer than Shay Lacy over the last few weeks. Two players who maybe you'll see them before the end of the season. Maybe not.
Let's see. But yeah, it'd be nice to see them off the bench, or maybe if we get more injuries that you just kind of go with it and roll the dice and get the kids in. But, you know, I say the same thing every week, don't I, Scott? Like, you know, believe in the kids. Like, the blood in the kids, losing with kids is fine, but I don't really want to lose all these players on £200,000-£300,000 a week that you constantly question about whether they should be at the football club or not. The youngsters do deserve to be at the club. That's what I do know, and you need to kind of stick with them.
So check him out. Check out Shay Lacy. Just go pop onto YouTube or the socials and have a look at his compilations. Or try and watch the United Youth team. They're pretty good.
They are very good. It's a very good class this year.
Yeah, it's very good.
Probably class, the best since 92, I would say. It's the best United youth class since 1992 in terms of talent from top to bottom. I'm not saying they're as good as the class of 92, of course not, but there's two, three or four players in there you already look at and you think, actually, they could be training with the first team next year. And I've not felt that in previous years when I've watched a youth team. There's always been one or two, but there's multiple teams there, multiple players in there. And I actually think, Scott, as well, if you do, you know, move Ten Hag on, that's important that the next coach is someone who is focused on those things and can develop youth. You know, again, where Graham Potter gets a bit of a tick, because that's something that he's been well known for in the past, to be able to take young players and make them Premier League ready quite quickly.
Yep. Let us know. Talk about anything that we have spoken about in the comments section. Get in touch with us on social media as well, and we'll be back early next week. So please subscribe to our audio show on Apple and Spotify and give us a 5-star review as well. Watch us on YouTube. We can like the stream, subscribe, leave a comment, and hit the notification bell so you don't miss a show as well. Follow us on social media at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @TPLMUFC on X as well. We've talked about a variety of topics today, avoided the Bournemouth game, but fingers crossed United can win somehow. Do you have any faith? Not really, that they'll go and take any points.
Open mind. That's the positive way of looking. I'm open-minded. Let's see what these boys can do and let's see how they're going. As I said, I don't think Ten Hag has lost the dressing room or anything like that. So I'm sure Ten Hag will give them some tactics and then our players will try and do those tactics. End of story. Let's see how it goes.
Thanks for listening or for watching, everyone. Until next time, this has been the Promised Land podcast. Have a fantastic weekend, and we'll see you next week to talk about whatever happens in Bournemouth and anything off the pitch that happens in between as well. Have a great weekend from Rob and myself, Scott. Until next time, see you soon.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.